This podcast episode is brought to you by Paleo Valley's Organic Extra Virgin Olive Oil. Now, we all know that many olive oils are cut with seed oils or that they are rancid, and so it's not always easiest to find a quality and properly sourced olive oil. Yes, in case you didn't know, many store-bought olive oils are diluted or blended, compromising both taste and quality, and may even cause rancidity. I'm really glad that Paleo Valley's extra virgin olive oil remains pure and unadulterated, sourced from a single organic valley in Greece. Paleo Valley ensures freshness and nutrient content by packaging their olive oil in dark glass bottles. At a certain point, I stopped using extra virgin olive oil, but once our practice started working with people with chronic inflammatory response syndrome, or SIRS, we started recommending it for the reduction of TGF-beta-1. It is an immune system marker that shows inflammation both for COVID-19, SIRS, and actually many other illnesses. So if your TGF-beta-1 is high, you may want to try incorporating a little bit of extra virgin olive oil. Make sure to check it out. It comes in a 2-pack package. And remember, all Paleo Valley products are guaranteed with a money-back guarantee. Go to paleovalley.com/NWJ to get 15% off your order. Thanks for supporting companies that support this podcast. Hey guys, it's Judy from Nutrition with Judy. And thanks for joining me today. While you're here, please make sure to like and subscribe, hit the red button. If you're listening to this on podcast, please make sure to leave a review as this allows my content to get in front of more people. And thank you for that. My name is Judy Cho and I'm board certified in holistic nutrition. And I have a private practice where we focus on root cause healing. And oftentimes that starts with the Carnivore Cures meat only elimination diet. So today I had the pleasure of sitting down with Sally Norton. I interviewed her a couple years ago and I will put the original interview with her in the show notes, but you want to make sure and check that out. It's been quite a while. In this conversation, we talk a little bit more nuanced. So we talk about what is oxalates, how it affects us, how it affects carnivores, and why for some people, you may want to go slow with the stopping of all oxalic acid foods as it can cause a dump of oxalic acid. Sally Norton, who has a master's in public health, is an expert in oxalates, which is a plant toxin found in many common health foods such as spinach and almonds. And Sally has a degree in nutrition from Cornell University and a master's of public health from the University of North Carolina. Sally also managed a 5-year National Institute of Health funded program at the UNC Medical School. Sally got into oxalates because she was really sick at one point and no standard care or research was helping her figure out why she was sick. So she put matters into her own hands and figured out that a lot of it was oxalic acid poisoning. In our discussion, we talk a little bit about her journey, about her upcoming book, and how a lot of the good foods that we think are healthy for us, such as spinach and dark chocolate and almonds and turmeric, is not the most ideal foods when it comes to oxalic acid. We also talk about oxalates as well as other plant toxins and what that all means for a carnivore. Let's get right into the interview. Hi, Sally. I'm so excited to have you on. It's been, I think, 2 years since we last recorded. I know we've had conversations offline, but for the people that may not have heard of you or have seen you, if you can introduce yourself.
Yes. Hi, Judy. It's so good to be with you again. I can't believe 2 years have gone by.
No.
Yeah, I've been playing in this world that nobody else is. It's like empty chambers over here in the library of learning about plant toxins. And I ruined my own health being a health geek since I was a little kid by trying to be healthy. Grew up on things like Swiss chard and rhubarb, and I love home-cooked food and gardening. I was already gardening as a 9-year-old. And when I was 12, I decided to go to college to study nutrition so I could help people not be sick. And, you know, by the time I was 16, I knew I would be at Cornell to get my nutrition degree. And I've just stayed in this world of wanting to figure out how to live well and be healthy. And my health was horrible the whole time. I'm now 58. And I, for the first time, I can tell you my health is not horrible, but it really hasn't been too good since I was about 12. And it turns out it was my own homegrown organic sweet potatoes and my own homegrown organic beets and Swiss chard that were ruining my health. And it's a very complicated story of things going wrong and more stuff going wrong over time and things in and out and no one has an answer. And the doctor is like, well, yeah, you probably have rheumatoid arthritis or whatever. Oh, by the way, you've got osteopenia. Oh, you got this, but you might have, you know, no real guidance anywhere. And that's despite the fact that I work in medical schools. I have friends and colleagues who are acupuncturists, massage therapists, homeopaths, naturopaths. Like, I'm really well connected in the health field and no one could help me get well. And when I was finally having this revelation that all along, all this arthritis and pain and fatigue, and then I learned that my sleep disorder, and then I learned that my foot problems that had me crippled all through my 20s, it all comes back to loving Swiss chard and sweet potatoes. Like, this is so shocking. Like, wait a minute. I'm supposed to know stuff. And I made myself sick trying to be healthy. So it's been a great love of mine to be in the literature. And I love the library.
I did.
And learning about this. So I put together this book, which is right here, Toxic Superfoods. It's coming out in December, because I felt like if my life is worth anything, it's that I leave behind a pretty good summary of my research before I'm dead. And so I've done that. It's like, if someone doesn't like the fact that I'm saying that Swiss chard and spinach and almonds and dark chocolate are bad for you, well, please read the book and give me a chance to help you, because that's all I care about is people who are looking for more answers and how to feel better. I want you to know this is something you should learn about.
Yeah. And so, if I were brand new to oxalates, what really is oxalates and why is it so damaging to the body when I eat the foods that you just mentioned?
Oxalates is called oxalates plural because it's multiple forms of basically the same chemical, which is called oxalic acid. It's a very, very tiny molecule. It has just two carbons and four oxygens on it, and technically two hydrogens, but usually it doesn't have, it never has both. It usually just has one or two hydrogens, and that hydrogen is acid. And where there's a missing hydrogen, you have a sharp negative charge that's quite interactive with things. So there's a sort of electromagnetic charge. It's a chelator of minerals. So you're eating an acid. And also in the plants, it's called oxalates, not just because there's this acid that might have one or two protons on it, but never has two, might have one or zero, with places for two, but because it chelates with minerals, especially calcium, the plants build calcium oxalate crystals. So these crystals, oxalate plus calcium and magnesium or other minerals, is basically a kidney stone. Okay. So 80% of all kidney stones are made from oxalate that has mineral on it, mostly calcium. And unfortunately, in medicine, for a long time, they've just called those calcium stones. Mm-hmm. Same with the calcification in your arteries, in breast tissue that's related to breast cancer. All that calcium is really either calcium oxalate or a product called hydroxyapatite, where the oxalate has turned those cells into bone-producing cells, and you're getting calcified by the fact that oxalate is damaging your cells. So I'll get to the question of, like, how is it damaging our cells? There's lots of different ways it's doing this. It's like, it's so tricky and sneaky. This is the sneakiest enemy you ever did have. It's like Teflon coated. Nobody's blaming it. It's getting away with lots of problems that it's causing for us as we're eating too much of it nowadays. And it's escaping notice. So calcium's getting blamed for the crimes that oxalate's been doing. So that, I don't know if that explains enough about oxalate, but you're eating a combination of acid and these little crystals that are nanoscopic. You know, they're quite small, but they're like glass. They're harder than teeth. And I've even had clients who've been eating foods like almond butter, which is, almonds are very high in oxalate and many other anti-nutrients. Almonds, to me, are one of the most toxic foods you could eat, but they're popular. And almond butter is popular. So she was using like apple slices and almond butter, and she wore down her teeth biting into almond butter because there's enough crystals and grit and junk in almond butter that the hard oxalate crystals wore down her teeth.
So then why is it that, well, I think I'm just going to be answering my question, but why is it that some people in the keto space that eat a lot of that, they do feel that they feel better without, and by removing a lot of the carbohydrates?
Yeah. So there's a lot of different metabolic responses to diets that may ultimately be toxic. And the body doesn't really complain about toxicity until all its reserves are depleted. So it's a lot of faking going on with the body's borrowing minerals from the bones and so on to keep your minerals and your blood perfect and keep you functioning. It's not evolutionarily, it's not appropriate to have you be weak and sick and unable to defend yourself or hunt for food. So the body prioritizes your function, your ability to think and so on as best it can, but you're slowly eroding your health in ways that may seem invisible. Or, you know, a lot of people say, that's not really bothering me. And then their wife goes on this low oxalate diet and all of a sudden their trigger fingers go away and they start having to clear their throat all the time, or they stop having to pee at night and they stop having this or that complaints. And they were no problems. I didn't have any problems, but they got better on their no problems. So there's a lot of, like, I think putting up with symptoms too long, things that we think is normal. You're getting older. Oh, it's menopause. You had babies. There's all these other excuses for why we start to fall apart and just accept that as okay. I think we're in a kind of a self-esteem culture that says, just buck yourself up and think positive and ignore the bad stuff. So we're in a habit of kind of downplaying our own suffering. And so I think it's possible to be feeling like you're fine on keto, maybe because you believe in it so strongly. And there is a huge placebo effect to eating. Eating is a great ritual that we do, especially if we have a certain way to do our smoothies or a certain way, even just the way you make your coffee is a ritual every day. So we get caught up in that confidence. I mean, I was confident that my sweet potatoes were great for me. I was sure they were helping me with all my food allergies. They were low allergy food. It was when I got off my vegetarian veganism, actually. I went to the sweet potatoes because I was now allergic to wheat and beans and I wanted something starchy, and I would have them for breakfast. I'd have some in my lunchbox, you know, because I would pack chicken, rice, and sweet potato for lunch and put it in the microwave. So I was eating way too many sweet potatoes, but thinking this was my safe zone. This was my low allergy safe. So it allowed my system, which is becoming more and more sensitive and more allergic, which is a red flag for oxalate. I believed in it. I didn't see. You cannot tell that you're poisoning yourself with oxalate. Really, the best way to tell is to go off of it with an education of what that might mean when you go off of it. And the beautiful thing about meat is that meat doesn't have oxalic acid and oxalate crystals in it for the most part. Like, there might be little traces in tuna and stuff, but there really isn't much oxalate at all in animal foods. And the plants are using them as a metabolic need that they have. And also they use them for self-defense in many ways. These crystals make them pretty untasty to bugs. And the trees put big blocks of crystals in their bark, and that makes it hard for the beetles to burrow holes into the bark. It also is a great way to excrete calcium, because plants live in calcium-based soils, and that calcium has to be managed, and it can be too much. And so you build a crystal as a way of, like, pooping out calcium, but you're also on the way getting rid of it. You're using it as a self-defense tool as well. Plants are super clever, and they can take oxalic acid crystals, the calcium oxalate crystals, turn it back into oxalic acid, and use that to fight funguses. You know, there's funguses in the air and the humid weather where we have, it's like the poor plants are being constantly pressured by funguses and insects and herbivores, and, you know, and so they've got to have a way to defend themselves. And oxalate is a major part of their self-defense arsenal.
What's
so
interesting,
meat eating is low oxalate.
Yes. And so a couple of things, what's interesting is, my father had kidney stones and he had to do the surgery to the removal of that. And then you get a list of the foods that you shouldn't eat after a kidney stone surgery. And it's all the high oxalic acid foods, but they never, and I always wondered, and now when I think of that, even for my clients that have had kidney stone removal, you look at the list and it's oxalic acid foods, like anything that's high. So obviously dark chocolate, spinach, they're all on that list of do not eat. And so I always wondered, why aren't they just saying it's a low oxalate diet? I think maybe some hospitals are now starting to do that, but it just says, here's a diet, kidney stone removal diet. Like, that's the diet. And then the other thing is, when I stopped eating plants, I was plant-based. And so I used to eat a pound of spinach a day on average, maybe some almonds, but generally, yes. And so I thought, I didn't have oxalate dumping. And so maybe I'm one of the lucky ones. But recently I went back into my blood work from when I was plant-based, and in my urine, it showed like oxalate +2. So I was absolutely poisoned with it, but I guess I just didn't have as many of the blatant symptoms. But that goes to then the carnivore diet of, so if we are now identifying that, okay, these foods are high in oxalates and we know that they've been poisoning us, but we want to do this carnivore diet that has shown so much healing, how do we do that transition without completely dumping so much that makes us more sick?
Right. Because what you're referring to is the fact that when we're eating it continuously in most meals and most weeks of the year for most of your life, it builds up in your body. So we end up with this oxalic acid borrowing calcium and other minerals from our blood and tissues and setting up shop in the body. Right. And it tends to hang out in areas where we've had injury, inflammation, wherever there's senescent cells, because you use those tissues a lot, the face, the teeth, the sinuses, the eyeballs, the bones, the bone marrow and all that. So the problem with switching from, say, a high oxalate diet, which the keto diet can be very high oxalate because the dark chocolate and the almonds and the spinach is so popular there. And the chia seeds is another thing that is keto, but pretty toxic. So that's bad enough acutely. So if you've had recently a high like sweet potato diet like I did, this is especially a good time to kind of go easy on it and like, all right, well, pick one of the high oxalate foods and cut that out. Find some other thing to eat. If you're insisting on a sweet potato, try squash for a while. And you're not necessarily going to feel better because you're still eating a high oxalate diet. That's fine. But then you can gradually teach the body. See, what's happening when we're flooding our body with a pound of spinach every day is you've taught your body to be in self-defense mode. And this is kind of a throw it in the attic process. Like, oh, we can't deal with it, so we're going to sequester it. So there's a whole metabolism in the body that's when oxalate's coming out of your food, it's in this like 8-hour period after the meal. So about 4 hours after your meal, you see this peak of oxalate coming out in the urine and in the blood and so on. And that's not good to have all this oxalic acid in the vascular system. So during these peaks after meals, the body is sequestering, so pulling it out of the blood because the kidneys may not get to it fast enough. And of course, when you eat oxalate or anything that you eat and gets absorbed into the bloodstream, goes straight to the liver. Like there's this whole hepatic circulation emptying everything out of your gut into the liver straight away to process that, to protect you and so on. And then the liver is sitting right under the diaphragm. And on the other side of the diaphragm is your heart, right? So the heart is stacked above the liver, but on the diaphragm, there's a little tiny vein called the inferior vena cava that it takes the blood from the liver to the heart. And the heart then sends the blood to the lungs for oxygen and then back to the heart again, and then pumps it through peripheral circulation. It goes to your face, your head, your arms, whatever. And then the kidneys pick up the blood and clean out a lot of the oxalic acid. But in the meantime, all your major organs, your liver, your heart, your lungs, probably your brain, your eyes, have all taken an oxalate hit. So if there happens to be like cells dying that day, which they do every day, they can be sticky to the oxalic acid. The oxalic acid sticks to these remnants of cells where there's lots of cell breakdown and there's like little vessels of cell bits hanging around. That promotes this switch of oxalic acid into crystals. So that's called precipitation. So each person is different in how they're collecting it and accumulating it, and very different in how the body reverses this sequestration process. So some of the sequestration, I think, is accidental, like hooking on these cell debris in the body. And the other part is intentional to try to protect the heart and the kidneys from failure. Because if there's too much oxalic acid in the calcium and mineral drop in the blood, the pacemaker gets all confused and can't work properly, and you get AFib and you get funny things. And this can be a symptom of oxalic acid either coming in the body or going out of the body. So on the way in, the body's in sequestration mode. It's managing it and keeping you from having heart symptoms and high blood pressure, low blood pressure, or, you know, high pulse and whatever. So, but on the way out, this can be a problem. Now, not everybody gets into like the whole body is suddenly needing it gone. Like it's a big emergency. When you go into a full carnivore diet, that's just animal products, is basically a zero oxalate diet.
Right.
And if you went from like a keto diet, you could have been at like 3000 milligrams, which is enormous, right? Because an extra high oxalate diet is defined as 600 milligrams a day. Wow. But your standard spinach smoothie is probably 900. So it's 1.5 times a high oxalate diet in one smoothie. And some of us, you know, how well we're tolerating it, and it depends on how much you absorb. And that's leaky gut. How leaky is your gut? The leakier it is, the higher the absorption rate. How well you can excrete it, how well the kidneys are doing. And if you start to develop kidney problems or kidney stones, you may get less and less good at excreting it. So you may have more on board. So going slowly will, there's a whole shift in the metabolism from I'm holding on to oxalate to I finally get rid of this oxalate. Like, yes. And some bodies are very enthusiastic about getting rid of it. And other bodies don't seem to have the capability to do that. And so it's simmering around in the background. I have speculation about some of the factors that affect how quickly the body starts being able to get rid of it. And sometimes the process of the body digging out these crystals, because really it's a long protracted problem of little particulate pollution in your bones and bone marrow and tendons and joints and so on. And when the body's trying to get rid of that, it sends these immune cells to try to eat the crystals, right? To break them down. And that often doesn't work very well because the crystals are so big and difficult for the cells. So the cells have to come together and form these giant cells. And sometimes that doesn't work. And they start spewing out enzymes, because in these crystal deposits, there's these debris material, lots of proteins. There's also proteins coating these crystals, because the immune cells in the past tried to deal with them when they initially set up, and wrap them either in dead DNA from white blood cells or whole dead white cells in these little pockets of coverage. This is an insulation around these crystals so they don't interact with your physiology. So all this nanoparticulate stuff can be silent symptomatically because the body's done a good job of wrapping it up and burying it like barrels under an old gas station, right? But when you start digging up barrels under an old gas station, it can be messy. And the bringing it out can be more toxic than bringing it in. And why it's harder on some people is hard to say, but it has to do with immune function and nutritional reserves and so on. And sometimes when we give people calcium, which is the main binder to bring oxalate out of the body, that increases the body's ability to clear the oxalate out. It's like a signal that says, oh, okay, now we know how to get rid of oxalate because there's calcium in the colon waiting for us, and we can excrete it into the colon as well as into the urine, which is the main route out. We can also get rid of it through the skin. The saliva glands concentrate oxalate. So you can tell if you get a lot of tartar, that could be because there's so much oxalate in your bloodstream. It's interesting. A nice sign. So this changing slowly is trying to avoid a disaster. So you got this big pile that's like teetering. You don't want the whole thing to come tumbling down too fast. So I liken this to like sneaking out of the baby's room backwards on tiptoe. Like you want to sneak out and not be noticed that you've left, because the baby could start crying and you might regret it. So some people do get quite sick with hip pain or fatigue or mood issues. I mean, oxalate can cause a lot of anxiety and mood problems. People have told me they were in counseling for 30 years. And now that they're on a low oxalate diet, they're fine. They never needed counseling to begin with. They needed no spinach diet.
So then how should we, I mean, is there a sort of recipe or protocol that if I want to start carnivore and I know that I've eaten a very high oxalate diet, is there a sort of protocol that I should be taking so that I don't get as poisoned by the desire for my body to want to now release the oxalates? Hey guys, I'm excited to share that I'll be speaking at Hack Your Health by KetoCon May 31st through June 2nd. You can come by and say hi while I do a book signing, or join me during the food addiction panel or the triumphs and troubleshooting on a carnivore diet panel on the main stage. Hack Your Health by KetoCon is the largest event in the US focused solely on the science and stories of tools to improve your health journey. As part of the conference, there are over 200 vendors and 70 speakers that include medical professionals, practitioners, coaches, and experts. I love this event because it's the largest community gathering of like-minded people. I guarantee you, you'll make at least one friend. Make sure to get your 3-day pass and use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your 3-day general admission pass. Go to hackyourhealth.com and get tickets today. It's an incredible experience you don't want to miss. And if you're at the conference, make sure to come by and say hello. Remember, use code NWJ50 to get $50 off your tickets.
Yeah. So it kind of depends on your constitution and what you're able to manage in terms of details. But what you need to do is take an assessment of the foods that you've been eating recently that you're accustomed to eating and pick out, you know, the spinach or the almonds or something, and just start doing one at a time. And then when you get down to a point where you're just having, say, a half cup of beets or occasional potatoes, or I don't know, tea is another one, or some, the typical ones that people hold on to are chocolate, potatoes, and tea. Those are the foods that seem to have this hooks on people where they don't want to let go. And that's fine. So pick the food you don't want to give up and hang on to that for a while, because that'll tell your body, no. Because my theory how this works, you know, in terms of nature, is that we used to always have winter, which was carnivore, right? You just don't eat that many acorns in February or whatever plants you were eating, right? So winter's carnivore. So normally the human beings, no matter how much plants they eat in the summer and fall, would have a season of clearing oxalates. So the body knows, oh, winter is here. When you go to carnivore, oh, winter's here. And that's okay, let's get rid of the oxalates. But if you got 40 years of oxalate or spinach smoothies or keto background, some weird stuff could be happening. And sometimes it's very diagnostic, you know. So I say get out of danger. So there's a level where the spinach smoothies and the keto bread and dark chocolate every day is puts you in a danger mass in terms of your health and your potential for health problems. And you want to get out of danger down to something that's considered normal, which is around 200, 150, 200 milligrams of oxalate, which would be still a fair amount of plant foods to get that much oxalate. And then find a food. I've got a whole, what I call a dosing table.
Okay.
That shows you how much, like to get 20 milligrams of oxalate, you might get 1 teaspoon of cooked spinach. You might want a teaspoon of cooked spinach every day to keep from going into heavy winter mode. It may not take too much. Like you can borrow a couple leaves off your boyfriend's salad of spinach to prevent you from dumping oxalate, or have a cup of tea. If you tolerate tea, if it doesn't bother your interstitial cystitis, where it makes your bladder irritated more, because oxalates tend to cause things like that. Tea is a great one, because you can do, if you're into the no carb, zero carb type carnivore, then tea won't add any carbs if you tolerate it. But it really is about customizing your situation, because by the time you're willing to try carnivore, you probably got some issues, right? Because it's still not considered a normal way to eat. Meat is so villainized right now, like eating a whole plate of meat and hardly anything else, you're going to die from that, right?
Of course, or have heart disease. When you say tea, is there a specific kind of tea that has more oxalates, and are there safer teas?
Black tea is your standard oxalate tea, which would be oolong tea and, you know, Constant Common and Earl Grey. Those are all black teas. And I usually say make it with 2 tea bags, make like a pint of tea. So you'd be sure to get 30 milligrams of oxalate out that. And if you use green tea, the standard kind of Japanese green tea, the tea amount in those green, because green tea is bitter, right? It's not as smooth as black tea. So the tea bag has about 2/3 or 3/4 of the amount of tea in it. And so it has about 2/3 of the amount of oxalate. So green tea, you definitely might need 2 tea bags or a pint to get it. So you can play, it's not so much a math game as it is listening to your body. Is this going to help you feel better? If you get into a mode where you're suddenly feeling really sick, tea might be a rescue thing for you. You start to feel better because it helps the body to re-go, oh, okay, no, we're not clearing oxalate. So that sounds a little weird, but yeah, tea is a good one if you want to be zero carb. But if you're needing to eat some carbs or something, there's things like carrots and beets and potatoes that you can play with. Squash doesn't have enough. The cabbage family doesn't have enough oxalate to really help you. So if you're just eating cabbage because you think it's got oxalate in it, forget that. It's not going to work. Rather, you have a teaspoon of spinach. It's a little tricky with spinach and Swiss chard. Chard is really off the charts. Beet greens, chard, and spinach are really crazy high. So literally like 1 taste might be enough. And that, again, that's not really a big violation of carnivore. That's the equivalent of putting a lot of spices on a steak. You know, it just isn't a lot of vegetable matter.
Right. And then the herbal teas, are they okay?
Yeah, the herbal teas don't have much oxalate. Okay. Ginger tea can have a little bit of oxalate in it, so that might be useful if you want to keep a little oxalate. But the herbal teas don't give you any oxalate, which is great for a low oxalate diet. But some people actually, you know, zero oxalate from 1,000 to zero is a rough cliff to jump over and a little rough on the body. So take your time to just get rid of the worst offenders. And so you can really simplify this. I have a beginner's guide on my website. In fact, there's one right here. It's a 4-page beginner's guide, and it kind of explains this mathematically and what food you're not eating, and has the chart of the high and low oxalate foods, and basically explains some of the basic stuff. This is enough to get you going. But if you're really committed to full carnivore, eventually, it might take 3 years. But eventually there may be a day where you're suddenly realizing, wait a minute, I think I'm having oxalate symptoms here. My hip is bothering me. I'm not sleeping right. I'm peeing all night. I've got tartar on my teeth. I'm having a splitting facial headache. You know, if I'm having some weird stuff going on, it's possible that the oxalates are now on the move. And on the move means, got to add back in. Maybe it is okay to have a bite of chocolate again, that kind of thing. So we can help you refine that, but hang on to some of these high oxalate foods for at least a couple months, maybe even 6 months. If you've been really high in oxalate and you're feeling kind of sick, you may need to drag this out longer. But not everyone has the constitution emotionally to do that. And I totally understand that. Our lives are too complicated, and thinking too hard about it and maybe dragging this out, like, how can one manage that? If that's not you, let's do carnivore plus some oxalates for a while, for maybe 6 months. So the cup of tea, the bite of chocolate, the half cup of beets, you know, this kind of thing. And you would need to do that, say, in dinner time. I really recommend including oxalate at dinner time, because sleeping is when we do our recovery and repair work. The body, I say the janitors come out at night, right? So they're there to clean up the mess at night. And so nighttime, if you're having trouble staying asleep, if you have to wake up and pee more than once a night, or even once, that could be because you're putting oxalates into your bladder and your bladder is like not having it and having a tough time. So nighttime, like dinner time, might be the time to have a little half cup of beets or the decaf tea. Now, decaf tea is lower in oxalate than regular tea by a little bit. So because the decaffeinated tea, it's the first 30 seconds of the brew. It's most of the caffeine comes out and a lot of the oxalate comes out in the first 30 seconds. So brewing tea for 5 minutes doesn't get you more than you get for brewing it for a minute and a half. Like, so much of it comes out early in the game that people get this fantasy that they're getting all the oxalates if they brew their tea longer. That's not necessarily true. But decaf tea or some beets or 2 bites of spinach at dinner might help you sleep better.
That's so interesting. And then in terms of let's say I started carnivore and then I kept in some of those oxalic acid foods or a little bit of spinach just to make sure that I'm not overly dumping. When do I know, and I know it's hard and it's very individualized, but when should I take it as a sign that I could start even tapering down that spinach?
Well, that's a really good question. I've got something called the symptoms and exposure inventory on my website, and you get a sense of the range of symptoms that could happen. And a lot of those and other ones will happen when you're clearing oxalate. So if you're not having tartar on the teeth, you're not having irritable urine or strange stool changes or mood changes, if you're not having achy hips or shoulders or wrists or whatever, neck or back, if you're not having funny things going on with tooth pain, then, you know, maybe you're not dumping oxalate. You can go ahead and go full carnivore and experience that and see how your body's doing on that. And I would say you probably should feel pretty good on that for at least a month or 3 months. And now, then after 3 months on full carnivore, and sometimes it takes 3 years for people. I've had people come to me 3 years post full carnivore, full real deal carnivore. Now, all of a sudden, deadly ill, unable to work. So there's no rules. And I think all the variables, even if we put a lot of research dollars into this and had a whole NIH house that was funding millions of dollars of research and had some really good brains on it, I don't think that we're in a position, despite computer programs and all, to be able to factor in all the factors that are influencing how the body's managing to recover from the past high oxalate foods. to know. So we really, it's important to just live your life, listen to your body, be educated. Keep in mind that that's always a possibility that oxalates could start doing strange things. If you suddenly get hiccup problems or seizures or headaches or tooth pain, you know, remember that it might be oxalate related, and there's things we can do to help you. You know, some of it's doable. I mean, you can live with a trick hip for a week. If your hip is hurting for a week because oxalates are coming out, you never think oxalates, and it'll pass and you'll be fine, because it's really about the body healing itself. It's not like a pathological problem until this goes on for a long enough time, this particulates annoying your immune system, because your poor immune system has had to manage this coming in and now going out. It's got to do this work. You could end up with serious problems like chronic mast cell activation syndrome, severe food reactions, where you start having more and more problems with food. You start having more inflammation in the body because you're eating foods that you're now allergic to. This happened to me. I'm now allergic to beef and probably pork. And it got really bad after I got COVID, but I've been ignoring the fact that eating beef made me feel tired afterwards for a long time. Like, well, whatever, you know, this is because that had stopped. Meals making me feel tired has stopped for years. And once I went low oxalate, I was like, oh, meals don't make me feel tired because I was low oxalate. But the chronic activity, cleaning out all these oxalates, keeps your immune system deranged and confused. And anything that you're eating while your system's in an inflammation state could suddenly get confused as something else the immune system needs to deal with. And the immune system starts being way oversensitive. And the other thing is you could get so much, monocyte activity with the crystals in the breast, you could end up with breast cancer, a very aggressive form of breast cancer that involves calcifications too. You could end up with, you know, calcified arteries. And these things, if you're have calcified arteries when you start carnivore and it doesn't get better in the first few years, maybe because there's all this inflammation in the vascular system because oxalate levels continue to be high because your system is loaded with oxalates. So it's a chronic disease. Once you've filled up your body with oxalates, you have now a chronic oxalate poisoning condition. Whether if there are symptoms or not, that's what's going on. And that could last 10, 15 years, and you could cause permanent damage to your immune system.
One thing that you brought up is that another, I guess, group of people that are risky with just going zero carb all of a sudden is pregnant women or women that are nursing their children, because they may start dumping into their children. Can you explain a little bit about that and maybe some anecdotal stories?
Yes. So the oxalate in your blood, right, it goes from your food into your blood, passes through the placenta. So a pregnant woman is passing on oxalate to a developing fetus. And the breast cells, especially when they're making breast milk, because they handle calcium so well, tend to attract oxalate, as many glands do. I mean, all glands seem to pick up a lot of oxalate. So your thyroid gland, your breast gland, your sebum, you name a gland, and in endocrine or exocrine, they're potentially a place where oxalate hangs out. So here's one story, and I've had several of these, but this one is the most dramatic and most heartbreaking, where a keto family, a keto couple who are eating full keto with like muffins and so on made from almond flour, stayed keto through their second pregnancy. And right when they gave birth to the second child, they switched to full carnivore. And the breastfeeding for this baby did not go well. The glands and ducts were clogging, and none of the typical way remedies for getting the breast clogs to fix were working until whole crystals, quite obvious big crystals, would push out of the nipples. And at the same time, the baby would have diaper rash and be fussy and feel sick. The baby would be sick at the same time that this oxalate dump was happening in the breast milk. And this child, she's now three, she's had struggles with going in and out of feeling awful and going from angel child to devil child and back and forth, because she's on and off clearing this clearing of oxalate from her body and all of us is usually cyclical. So you get little bouts, you feel terrible for some amount of time, and then you can feel pretty good for a short time, and then you can go back into feeling bad. So this little child has not had an easy time. Now they have a third child who's 5 months old, and this child is having seizures now. The breast milk from mom at 3 years out from switching from keto is now still heavily dumping, not with the obvious crystals anymore, but we're seeing it in the child they had a neuro evaluation and so on, but it's affecting the whole family for a long, and it'll be a long time problem the whole family has to deal with. And the dad has been quite sick for the last 3 years. Well, actually for the last year and a bit. So it took him almost 3 years before he started to feel oxalate sick. He went to full carnivore and was just about 3 years before he got anything at all. And I think now the wife is 3.5 years out and she's still, this is actually the third year in my view is the heaviest year. If you've started obvious clearing oxalates early on, third year can be the heaviest, hardest year of oxalate coming out. It is a long process. So, and children are especially vulnerable to the effects of oxalate. We didn't really talk about all the effects that oxalate has, and that's fascinating. It's a long laundry list of ways that cells are being damaged and tissues are being damaged by oxalate. But the most fundamental one is mineral deficiencies developing, especially calcium deficiency, because oxalate binds calcium in the food, in the blood, in the tissues. And calcium deficiency is devastating to children's growth. Devastating.
So if that couple, I mean, if that family, for example, were to increase their calcium consumption, dairy, and maybe even add a little bit back of the oxalates, would they start mitigating some of the pain and illness that they're experiencing?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Calcium can really lower the pain. Calcium at bedtime improves sleep. It improves all of this. And, getting the mom to eat more oxalate would be the answer to slow down, to clean up her breast milk. Very important to like stop all this heavy clearing with everybody, especially the mom who's feeding the babies, and get enough calcium in everybody. And you can use mineral baths because it's all the minerals. It's a disruption, right, all the electrolytes. So you need more salt, potassium, magnesium, trace minerals, and calcium when you're oxalate poison. And so a nice mixed mineral bath, I have a formula in my handouts, you know, use some sea salt, use Epsom salts, use some potassium bicarbonate and so on. Nice mineral bath. You can dab that with a washcloth on a baby's skin. You could put in a little spray bottle and spray it on necks and shoulders and get some minerals transdermally, because you don't always tolerate salt and minerals orally. And with young children, skin is an easy way to help get them some support.
And then how do we know if sometimes it may not be? So let's say somebody does carnivore and they're just not feeling well. Mm-hmm. Yes, one big path is to go oxalate and maybe to introduce that. How do we know if sometimes it's not the oxalate thing? Maybe it's that they just can't digest fat. I'm just trying to think of some things, but.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that it's really not fully possible to ever eliminate oxalate as a player.
Sure.
Because it is so hard to measure it, and it's so universal, and it is a player because it's messing cells up at the mitochondrial level. It's making cells deficient. It causes inflammation and oxidative stress in cells. It kills off mitochondria, inverts the structure of the membranes. And so the cells don't live as long because the immune system has to take away those damaged cells. It slows down cell reproduction rates. It's just so many effects that you can't help but in today's world have been raised on peanuts and potatoes and chocolate to not have some degree of that interfering with your liver function, your bile function, your glandular function, and so on. So that chances are it's a player, and it's playing with you in a completely unique way because you have a unique history, you have a unique genetics, and you have a unique lifestyle that makes it very idiosyncratic. But I think it doesn't really matter if oxalate is the cause. Maintaining a high oxalate diet will just keep whatever you've got wrong not getting better. It will interfere with normal healing and recovery. So if you're sick on carnivore, you know, there's lots of things to consider. But I think the main two factors that make us sick are deficiency and toxicity. So somewhere we're not been able to correct the deficiency and the toxicity, and that's why there's still problems going on.
That makes sense. I've had a few clients where they're eating 2 pounds of meat a day or something around that, and they're still deficient in iron, or like they showed anemia, or there's other people that show deficiencies in B vitamins. And we can start with the gut, but sometimes it's beyond that. And maybe sometimes it's, maybe we need to actually introduce a little bit of the oxalates to help them not feel as bad. But I can see how that makes sense. Are there,
I need to talk about anemia too, if you want.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So oxalate tends to interfere with the last step in glycolysis. So this is the first step where you break down glucose and you get two ATP molecules, and that's the energy that cells run on. And red blood cells don't have the Krebs cycle because they're just They don't have the mitochondria. So they need those two ATPs really bad because that lets them pump the electrolytes across the membrane and control themselves. So there's this ATP sodium pump, right? If you don't have enough ATP because the oxalate has prevented you from making ATP, the sodium gets stuck in the cell and the cell expands and swells and explodes and dies. So it creates this hemolytic anemia when there's oxalate in the bloodstream. But at the same time, oxalate's collecting in the bone marrow where all the cells are born to begin with. All your blood cells are born, your monocytes and other immune cells, immature. So they get released from the bone marrow slightly, not quite all the way developed. They get slightly premature release. They're damaged. Then they encounter oxalate in the blood, which causes them to become pro-inflammatory, and they start putting out pro-inflammatory cytokines, so they're damaged then. And then the red cells get oxalate inside them, and now they can't make ATP, and they die. So if you have anemia, if you have low blood counts, if you have weird high counts, all of that stuff could be a sign that there's something going on with oxalate.
And then I know that you said specifically that every individual would be different, but are there some big overarching symptoms that would be related to oxalates?
Yeah. So diagnosing the existence of the condition with or without a carnivore diet, the traditional meaning, the original diagnosis, which was 1842.
Okay.
Was, is there a digestive problem going on? Because they were seeing things like intestinal obstruction as one of the major, like, oh my gosh, something's going on. And then with that, you have either something rheumatological, which would be joint and muscle pains, like fibromyalgia and arthritis, and or something neurological, which would be mood and personality changes, poor coordination, pain syndromes, that kind of stuff, anything that's nerve function. And surprisingly, people don't realize that every muscle is basically a nerve function. Like your muscles operate because the nerves tell them to do something. So if you have spasm things, like you have reflux, or you can't swallow properly because your muscles that run peristalsis are spasming either top or bottom. It could be chronic constipation or chronic diarrhea, or it could be inability to swallow or reflux or a goofy hiatal hernia, or things like hiccups. Hiccups is a classic oxalate neurospasticity where the nerves are sick, so they're not acting right, and the muscle's sick. It also needs nerve cells and muscle cells must control their calcium, like all cells must in order to function. But it's particularly obvious with the nerves and muscles. So in the studies, for example, when the rats are about to die or the humans about to die from starfruit poisoning from oxalate, the hiccups are one of the last symptoms that show up before they die. And I used to have those hiccups every night at bedtime. I'd get in bed and I would have really massive hiccup attacks. It made me feel like my ribs were going to bust, you know, crack. And then I would get a belching attack. Belching is another form of spasm that can be a sign. So there's the GI stuff. And, you know, if you got aches and pains and stuff bothering you, neck pain is classic, neck and back pain. And then any kind of like frozen shoulder, carpal tunnel, calcified tendons, bone spurs, those are all like the rheumatological stuff. And of course, fibromyalgia. And fibromyalgia is another great example of mitochondria damage, because in fibromyalgia, a really uneven distribution of mitochondria in the muscles and other issues. Another big sign of oxalates is if you have like syndrome, like all these new syndromes that are out there. Like if there's lots of little body parts like doing weird things, skin issues, lichen sclerosis, and just all this weird stuff, eczema, all this stuff could be a sign.
And then let's say I ate a lot of oxalic acid foods. And then if I have my child, but then I didn't really have him dump, does he get born with a certain amount of oxalic acid in him as well?
It would be nice if we had a scientific answer to that, because most of the studies are from cats and animals.
Okay.
Because you see it in the barnyard a lot where the animals accidentally get stuck in a patch of these weeds that are high in oxalate, or they feed beet tops to animals because, you know, we have a big sugar industry that grows beets for the sugar. So what do you do with all those tops? You water them down in the food for the animals, but it can still be too much and you can kill your whole flock. And a lot of sheep have died in the name, and even cattle, and horses get big head and get diseases from, because grass doesn't have enough calcium in it for them, you know? So if you add a high oxalate weed to a hay and grass diet, they get calcium deficient very quickly, and it's quite bad for them. So all that's a long answer to say that most of the research I've read about, let's see, miscarriage and childhood issues with oxalate is coming from animal reports, from the veterinary literature.
Do you, from your experience and what you've read, and just this being your opinion, would you say that a lot of, if I had a child and let's say I ate a high oxalate diet and without even breastfeeding, would my son then be born with some level of oxalic acid damage?
I think that all of humanity has made such a bad deal with plants that for the last 400 years, we don't even know what a really healthy human looks like anymore because we've so overdone these foods. We got really wedded to potatoes and tea and so on 400 years ago. And it's just getting worse and worse now. Yeah. So if we could go back to the days when people weren't, these are neo foods. I mean, peanut butter was never a human food. Almonds, when I was growing up, they were the garnish on the beans on Easter dinner. And that was the end of it. Like one in the toe of the Christmas stocking. Like you just didn't see almonds. What was that stuff my grandfather used, like the almond paste you use in baking, you know, like that was precious thing that, you know, a small amount, 2 tablespoons of this would feed 6 people for dessert. So, what we're doing now is just off the charts, but I think it started hundreds of years ago and we don't know what a really healthy baby looks like anymore.
And then in terms of, there's obviously all the other anti-nutrients, Dr. Gundry is super big into everyone needs to stop the lectins. Do you think that there is one worse than the other? Do you have any thoughts about the other anti-nutrients that other people talk about?
Yeah. So this is an important topic because there are many, many plant anti-nutrients and none of them are to be taken lightly. I think they're all getting too little attention. The thing about phytates is it's an easy soak. Like you soak, you germinate, you whatever, and you deal with it. Soaking only makes oxalates worse, probably, because you're now liberating the calcium oxalate crystals and turning it back into oxalic acid through the soaking, making it more able to get into your bloodstream. So that's not really helping you. The lectins, you need to soak them for 3 to 4 days if you read the literature and not just books, but if you actually read the research, just soak them like 3+ days and then really high cook them to get rid of the lectins. And I think that's super important. I personally ruined my health on my gut health permanently with lectins. Oh, okay. I was a Cornell educated nutritionist, slow cooking my beans. Okay. So I was a vegan living with vegans and, you know, shared women's house where I didn't want to be in the way in the kitchen. So I would do these, I would throw dried beans with a little scoop of peanut butter and garlic in the crock pot at night. And then the next morning I could have a bowl full of cooked beans for breakfast and get to work. And I did that for a whole summer and I developed really severe post-infectious IBS. It was the weekend of Labor Day, 1990. And I will never forget that. That had changed my life. So I became so bad with IBS where I couldn't sometimes drive. I didn't want to live. I'd be on the floor in the bathroom with pain and my guts have never recovered. But I know for a fact that I had oxalate problems before that. Like it didn't take the lectins ruining my gut for me to have oxalate problems. It just on a deficient vegan diet, eating slow cooked beans, I'm lucky to be alive. Like that's bad news. So I do not like the lectins, but I do think it's pretty easy to cook them away and avoid seeds and peel things and get around them if you're going to eat plants. But lectins are another reason. Like maybe if you're really sick, if you have ruined your gut, if you are sick, you have no business eating high lectin foods. You need to be eating things that are soaked. And yeah, the way to heal your gut is to get rid of plant fiber. I'm really not a fan of soluble fiber. I'm not a fan of insoluble fiber. I think that just causes dysbiosis more than it helps it. This idea that eating fiber, which is another plant anti-nutrient really, is important to grow bacteria. Actually, the body is so smart. It does its own gardening. It puts out mucus to feed the healthy bacteria. Yeah. And when you put too much fiber in the gut, it's not only irritating, like those oxalate crystals irritating, but it's also promoting overgrowth and dysbiosis and it causes more inflammation in the gut. So I'm not a fan of plant anti-nutrients at all, but I truly believe the number one Uno one that's really causing more problems and gets no attention is really oxalates.
And it makes sense. I mean, a lot of people, if we were to just change the word of kidney stones to oxalic acid poisoning, I mean, there's a lot of people that suffer from kidney stones and need to do that surgery. So I think it's just your book will help so much with bringing that into just awareness. I think that Dr. Steve Gundry's book with just the plant paradox has brought a lot of knowledge about lectins. It's not just about gluten anymore. I mean, gluten is an anti-nutrient. So if people doubt any of this anti-nutrient stuff, I mean, there are people that have celiac disease that are very, very gluten intolerant. And just about everyone is sensitive to gluten. It's just, we just sort of deal with that bloat and unwellness. And then lectin has had its moment. So now I hope that people get to know oxalic acid more in your book. Your book is coming out. Can you tell us a little bit about when it's coming out and, you know, what can we expect as a reader in your book?
Oh, yeah. So the book is being released on December 27th. Which is part of like, okay, let's get healthy. It's the new year. So that's right. Why they decided Random House. It's through the imprint is Rodale Press. And you can buy this book and pre-order it anywhere books are sold. Okay. So if you're really interested in the topic, I encourage you to pre-order the book. What you're going to get from this book is like soup to nuts, as condensed as I could, as understandable as humanly possible, real science. Lots of stories that says, oh, this happened to this person, this happened, like, to illustrate the point. So it's really a mixing science and explaining why you need to know the science. So there's chapter on what is oxalate and why do plants need it and why don't we know about this and how are other things in our diets affecting our health and how oxalates are affecting us, you know, why nobody's paying attention to it, how it accumulates, the evidence that it accumulates, because accumulation isn't accepted even in mainstream science and medicine. They don't realize that you don't need renal failure. You don't need kidney stones to have it in your thyroid gland, because 85% of us have it in our thyroid gland. So 85% of us are not in renal failure. I mean, it should be obvious, but there's so many reports of oxalate in the body. So I share some of that and how that all works, and then explain, you know, why, how the body, you know, and from the medical literature, how it's coming out, and I explain, all right, so how do you assess yourself? How do you get going? How do you do a phase transition? Mm-hmm. So there's a phase one where you come down to that like 100, 200, and some people need to stay there and not go all the way zero. And then, you know, all the supports, how to take minerals and use mineral bathing and why you need to get some sun and why you might be sun sensitive, why sauna is important, like all the support stuff. There's tons of information in there, soup to nuts. So this covers the basis as succinctly as I can. Hopefully you're going to find it a really fun read and you'll get through it all. Their chapter 10 is loaded with like charts of the symptoms and tries to explain some of these mechanisms of the why so many diseases, why one little chemical could show up and cause trouble anywhere.
That's powerful. I love that. And, you know, as a book writer as well, I know that the pre-sale is so important. I mean, if people that are listening and watching are going to buy this book after it launches, there's a huge benefit for the author if people purchase it prior, because then that wholesale, all of the book sales prior to the book launching will be considered day one sales. And then Amazon and all these other algorithms will think, oh, this book sells well, so then I will give it more exposure. And if we want people to learn about oxalates and knowing that spinach is not maybe the best food to be eating, or the dark chocolates or the almonds, if we want people to really learn about this, then we can do our part by, if we're going to buy this book anyway, to buy it during the pre-sale, which then would allow this book to then get into the algorithms and have more exposure and Amazon recommended to people that are not even in the carnivore space, but maybe they bought Steve Gundry's book and they will say, oh, now I can learn about these other anti-nutrients like oxalates, which are so important to human health. And I think that's how we can do our part in sharing and spreading the word of your book and areas that we never consider that can actually be harming us.
And that's absolutely true. We have to speak to the bots and have the algorithms help other people discover this. And right now, the way it works on Google and stuff is they prioritize like WebMD over you and I. And so it's through the book sale process that we show that there's an actual interest in a conversation. And the even better thing to do, not only pre-order it, but go ahead and do a review that first week it comes out.
Right.
Give it a strong review or lots of stars, so that that also tells the bots, hey, people actually are benefiting from this information. That encourages that algorithm that will then present it as a shopping option for people who are looking for how to get healthy in the new year.
Right.
So and my goal really is just to try to help more and more people.
Agreed. And when I work with clients that are carnivore, but they can't stay consistent, So the true answer is maybe they just need to add a little bit of vegetable so they feel that mental, okay, I have variety. And the biggest thing I will recommend them not eat then is, because then the next question always to me is, well, what are the safest plants I can eat? And so the first thing I say is, let's make it super simple and just limit all the oxalic acid foods. So that's how I go through the plant list. And so I think it makes a lot of sense. Thank you for all the research you've provided to our communities, because it's helped so much. I know that I have a lot of clients that will say, I notice oxalate dumping, where they'll start showing a little bit of crystals here and there on their skin. So, and a lot of it is attributed to your work, because like you said, there's not many people looking into this. And so you are helping so many. So I hope that your book does really well. Out of curiosity, from your whole book experience, you know, you and I have talked offline, but what has been your whole experience with book publishing and getting your book out there? If you had a big takeaway, what would it be?
Well, you have to be in it for the right reason, because it will wear you down. The process of finding an agent and getting, I wanted a mainstream publisher. I could have self-published this, but self-publishing is where you actually make some income off your book.
Yeah. Agreed.
But I'm not interested in that. I'm okay with like living on tuna fish from a can or whatever I have to do to get the message out, because I really want to change the conversation about nutrition. I want more and more people who are in positions of authority, who are also oxalate poisoned and don't know it, to be invited to the conversation. So getting the process of doing this kind of book is particularly a difficult one, because I'm pulling together 3,000 articles I've read, actually many more than that, but the ones I've tagged as oxalate articles is like 2,200 articles in my own database, and trying to figure this out. Like, it's been a puzzle the whole time. I've been digging up articles for 8-9 years. And so that was hard enough. Then how do I explain this to the public? Like, okay, now how do I make this a book and organize it? So that can, where you rewrite your book like 5 times and keep reorganizing it and try doing it different ways to try to make it work. And so that's an interesting process. And then you've got to get through the production, like get it laid out and get the typos fixed. And then there's like back and forth and back and forth. And like, oh, every holiday weekend, the book lands back to me from the publisher. Like, oh, we got to go over it again. And I have to go through it and fix stuff they messed up. So it's a really interesting process where you just have to be so devoted to this. It's almost like being the mom of a disabled child. Just stay really devoted to it. And so I'm just so pleased that there's an end for me and a beginning of a conversation that I think could be a long 20-year conversation that's going to make a huge difference in people's lives. And I'm hoping that's what a book is still can do. People say books are irrelevant now and everything's a podcast, but I'm hoping a book can help us make a better, safer world for all of us.
I love it. And I agree. I've remodeled homes before, and I really think a book is very similar. There's so many different processes through the whole book writing process, and just writing the book is just one small aspect of the whole book production and all the players and getting everything right. And even thinking about what level of understanding do you want to put into the book, right? So is your audience the science PhDs, or is it just the average mom that's buying spinach and thinking she's doing a good job for their children? And it's a hard process. And I commend you for all that. I know that when I was writing Carnivore Cure, you were still writing the book and going through so many iterations. And so I know how much labor and love is in every book. And I don't think the average person that has never written a book doesn't realize how hard it is. So I want to commend you for, you know, you have the light at the end of the tunnel now. And I hope that many people see that light, so they know maybe if they're not feeling well and they have certain joint pains or certain things going on, that it's actually the food itself that they think they're doing right by is actually hurting them.
Yeah. And the cool part of that is you have total control over what you eat. Like, you can do so much for yourself. You don't actually need a lot of procedures, a lot of diagnostic money. You can really do this on the cheap and really get real health out of the deal. And the carnivore diet is really helpful in the healing process. And you may not stay there forever for whatever reasons, but coming to carnivore for part of your healing path and learning about oxalates thanks to carnivore. Some people would never learn about oxalates. I love the carnivore diet because it reveals, suddenly crystals start popping out of people. Like, what? You can hardly deny that. When you have, I have people sending me pictures and crystals routinely. I never had crystals popping out of my skin, but I peed out a lot of cloudy urine and I've been peeing oxalates. I'm finally getting past that in my ninth year. But so this is a beautiful thing that people are willing to try the carnivore diet, and it's helping them discover things like oxalate poisoning was really a major player in a lot of our health. And wow, I mean, you really can live without spinach. I promise you can do it.
I think it's really educating people to know that, hey, your food that you're even, I think a lot of people don't like spinach. It's just, we have heard so much that there's so much iron and there's so much richness. I mean, that's why when I was plant-based, my number one food to go to was spinach, because that's what I thought was doing so good for me. And I should have known, because when I was pregnant with my first child and I was still plant-based, they told me I was partly anemic. And I do remember having a split second of, well, that's weird because I eat so much spinach, but I never questioned my diet being as unhealthy. And I continued to eat that way. Instead, I popped iron pills because that's what I was told from my provider. So where can people find your book and where can they find you?
Okay. So my website is sallyknorton.com. That's the best place to find me. And please, if you want to be in touch, I'm not too great about sending emails, but I'll try to get better. Sign up for my list, because Instagram is the one social media platform where I tend to spend time, but it's unreliable because I had it stolen briefly. So I have two accounts. One is called the new one that I put together when my old one was stolen, which was the old one is Sally K. Norton, S.K. Norton. S.K. Norton is my main original one. And then I started toxicsuperfoods_oxalate_book. And that's to talk more about the book. And that's because I lost my account temporarily. But so that taught me, like, I can't communicate with you through Instagram because someone else is in charge of Instagram. Right. And when some bad person takes your account, they don't help you get it back. It's gone. Or if they put you in Instagram jail because you looked funny one day, you don't have any control over that. So please sign up on my email list so I can at least tell you, hey, it's not me. I don't own my Instagram account anymore. Somebody stole it. I can tell you that. I was very frustrated that I couldn't communicate with my followers. Like, don't listen to what my account is telling you. If it's not about spinach and oxalate and health, that's not me. I don't advise people on crypto.
Yeah, I think I saw a story once when I first heard that it got stolen from you. And the story said something about investing in stocks. And I was like, I don't think this is her, but I do remember seeing a story like that.
Yeah. It's teaching us all. I like Instagram a lot because I find that people are generally nice and friendly and appreciative. And I get a lot of love back and forth there. But
right. We
got to wise up. You know, you have to have this thicker skin, because some people aren't very nice. And you also have to know who to avoid and what to avoid and be cautious. And when you're in a hurry like me and you've got, you know, I got a lot of activity going on, you can make a mistake and have your account lost.
But I'm glad you got it back. So that's the beauty. I mean, there are some people that never get it back, or they get kicked off and they're never allowed back. So,
Well, it took 18 days of emailing them every day and telling them I don't speak Turkish. And I set it up on this a day. Like, I gave them all this information and I kept telling the bots, give me a human being, because I don't speak Turkish, because all the messages from them came back to me in Turkish. And it just took a long time to keep convincing them that I don't speak Turkish. And because what happened, I think that people who stole it hooked it up to a different Facebook account. So every time I tried to win it back, they immediately denied it because they set up authentication through their Facebook account. So once they had done that, they maintained control over it, because the help at Meta isn't help at all. It's not human beings helping you out at all.
Scary times. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure talking with you on and offline. And I'm excited for your book, and I will share it, because I know even offline knowing you, it's just all your work is truly evidence-based, and you do things because you want to help people. And it's not that I know that the publishers don't give a ton of money. So I get it fully, that it's truly from the greater good of your heart of wanting to help people. So thank you.
Thank you for your interest. It's so nice to work with you. And it's a beautiful thing that you and all of us who are exploring for our own health are really helping each other. You know, it's really gorgeous. I love it.
Thank you. Okay, guys, I hope that this gives you another lever for healing. Not everyone notices oxalate dumping on a carnivore diet. I know for me, I didn't feel like I noticed it. Now, I do have back pain sometimes. So I do notice that if I ever try to eat some almonds or something, I will feel some back pain. So I wonder if that's some of the oxalates. But I did notice in my urinalysis that there were oxalates when I was plant-based, and I think a little bit after I first started carnivore. So always trust your body. Even Sally mentions that it gets really tricky for every individual person. But if you are noticing a lot of symptoms on carnivore, you may want to consider just leaving in a little bit of oxalate foods, such as almonds, turmeric, teas, etc., to see what makes sense for you. Okay, guys, you know the drill. Make sure to eat a lot of meat. Take care of your bodies because it is the only place you have to live. I will talk to you later. Bye, guys. Thanks for listening to the Nutrition with Judy podcast. If you liked what you heard today, please make sure to leave a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app so more listeners like you can find the show. If you want more practitioner care and support, head over to nutritionwithjudy.com/groups so you can get more real talk about carnivore, the environment, and root cause healing. You can also find my content on Nutrition with Judy's YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Make sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter and learn more about in-depth articles with infographics at nutritionwithjudy.com/articles. You can find my 2 books, Carnivore Cure and The Complete Carnivore Diet for Beginners, on carnivorecure.com and amazon.com. At the heart of Nutrition with Judy's practice, our mission lies with a deep, unwavering passion for service and community. We will continue to empower you to have the knowledge and tools to live a life nearly symptom-free, because we firmly believe in healing and wellness for all.